This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I mean, she said to me before I even got up to Tallahassee, she said, you know, you need to be careful up there because there are men and people who will take advantage of you if they get the opportunity.
Just how common is this warning for women who work in and around the Capitol?
I'm not the only person that's been told that. I know that for sure.
Sunshine State News reporter Allison Nielsen discusses Tallahassee culture from a woman's point of view.
Yeah, we're also going to make sure that everybody in this building and that works in this process is going to be protected at the same time. So
that's South Florida Senator Lauren Book, whose bill to be heard this week prohibits legislators, public officials, and lobbyists from sexual harassing anyone. But when it comes to dealing with sexual assault and sexual harassment, the Florida legislature lags behind states like Maryland.
The Maryland General Assembly is ahead of the country in terms of responding to issues of sexual assault. They made policy changes after the Billy Bush Trump tape.
That's Lisa Jordan, the executive director of the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault. All that and more coming up on episode 135 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. So President Donald Trump responded to Jay-Z's criticism after his appearance on CNN with Van Jones.
He is somebody who's now saying, look, I'm growing, I'm dropping black unemployment. Black people are doing well under my administration. Does he have a point that maybe the Democrats have been giving us good lip service but no jobs? Maybe he's going to say terrible things but put money in our pocket. Does that make him a good leader?
No. Because it's not about money at the end of the day. Money is not, doesn't equate to like happiness. It doesn't. That's not missing the whole point.
Trump sent a tweet as usual, wanting to take credit for black unemployment that was already on a steady decline. But that's all we have to report on that. I really just wanted an excuse to play a few seconds of this song. But let's turn our attention back to Tallahassee. This is the fourth week of the legislative session, and sex scandals will take center stage again. But this time with a focus of fixing the problem instead of just highlighting the latest incident. The atmosphere around the legislature since opening day has been a bit weird. But here's North Florida Senator Bill Montfort.
What's the mood like?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, it's hard to describe the mood, if you will. I think everybody certainly is, you know, we're disappointed and concerned, upset, if you will, about, you know, what's happened in the last few months. But it's time now for us to get the work done. Let's recognize we have a problem. Let's address that issue. Let's find out how we do it and do it professionally and do it quickly, and get the people's work done. But we can't do that until we admit that we've got a problem. We've got to solve that problem. And the first thing to do is recognize it. And I know the Senate anyway. We've got people in the Senate who are working on some policies that I think will reflect the seriousness of it.
All right, so there is a problem here in the Capitol. Jack Latvala, a top Republican senator, resigned after an investigation revealed sexual misconduct. Another senator admitted a sexual affair with a lobbyist and resigned. That was Senator Jeff Clemons, and former Representative Rich Workman, who was appointed to the Public Service Commission by Governor Rick Scott, had to resign after Senator Lisbeth Beniquisto accused him of inappropriately touching her. So that's just a glimpse of the problem, and as far as fixing it, Senate President Joe Negron has talked about the Senate's zero tolerance for sexual harassment or misconduct of any kind in his chamber. And he said they will revise policies regarding harassment. On the House side, Speaker Richard Corcoran criticized Congress for its practice of doling out payments for sexual harassment settlements, $17 million total since 1997. But what about solving Florida's own problems? South Florida Senator Lauren Book is attempting to do just that with her bill 1628. That would prohibit legislators, public officials, and lobbyists from sexual harassing anyone. I caught up with Book on opening day, who tried to keep focus on the usual drumbeat of session issues.
And we're going to focus on those things, and I think we're in a great place to do that. We're also going to make sure that everybody in this building and that works in this process is going to be protected at the same time. So, you know, our president said we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can do all of those things and make sure that we're representing our constituents well. So I'm very excited about the next 60 days.
All right, from my vantage point, me, your host, I monitor several state houses across the country. And considering what has gone on here in Florida's capital within the last few months, there's a realization that the Florida legislature is moving sort of at a snail's pace when it comes to dealing with these issues. Thanks to Maryland's General Assembly's rapid response and passage of several laws to help victims of sexual assault, some victim advocates claim the state is leading the country with its handling of those cases. Last year, several laws took effect, including a provision known as No Means No, meaning evidence of physical resistance is not required to prove that a sexual crime has been committed. The Maryland General Assembly has now formed a 12-member commission to examine workplace policies on sexual harassment in all three branches of state government. Lisa Jordan with the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault has been named a member.
The Maryland General Assembly is ahead of the country in terms of responding to issues of sexual assault. They made policy changes after the Billy Bush Trump tape and have continued to update their policies.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
Oh, yes, the Donald is good.
Whoa.
Oh, my man.
Remember the infamous leaked Access Hollywood tape? Here's a snippet.
Yeah, that's it, with the gold. I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the pussy. I can do anything.
So that tape triggered the Maryland General Assembly to update their policies. They've passed laws like keeping rape kits around for 20 years. The panel there will review state policies and solicit input from business leaders, the public, and policy experts and make recommendations to their legislative policy committee. So what do you think about the Florida legislature and how it has been handling issues surrounding sexual misconduct? Is the response tepid? What more could they do or should do in dealing with this? Share your thoughts on social media or visit our website, rotundapodcast.com, and send us your comments. Coming up, what's it like to cover and witness and experience the part of Tallahassee culture where sex is one of the many tools used to make things happen?
I have so much sympathy for these women, you know, who came forward with these allegations because I've heard firsthand just how big of an impact kind of the fallout has had on them. And it's just, it's never easy to come public against, you know, with very serious accusations and say, you know, like the Me Too movement where you're saying, this happened to me.
Sunshine State News reporter Allison Nielsen joins the program. Stay tuned. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. Please send us your generous contribution to rotundapodcast.com. Help us expand our reach. This program is featured on newspaper websites throughout Florida and across the country, and we couldn't do it without your support. Follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, at Rotunda Podcast, and even Facebook. And check out where you can easily hit the donate button on rotundapodcast.com. We welcome your generous contribution along with your tips and story ideas. And as always, thanks for your support. Welcome back to the program. So we're keeping the conversation going, looking at the sexual misconduct avalanche that's been dominating headlines, not just around the country and the world, but here in Tallahassee. Allison Nielsen is a reporter with Sunshine State News, a news organization with an editorial board that believes free market, less government solutions will prove successful in addressing the problems of the state. All right, so Allison just broke the news to the world that she is leaving Sunshine State News to head to Washington. But we'll get to that later. For now, let's talk some Florida politics while she's here with us.
I'm ready if you're ready.
So, Allison Nielsen, welcome to the Rotunda. How are things?
Things are going well. How are you doing, Tramel?
I'm doing very well. So, I see you've been thinking about making a podcast where you just read the top headlines and scream for about an hour.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a podcast that many of us would relate to, and I would gather that it would be a very successful podcast. Maybe you can do a spin-off podcast.
So let's at least make the foundation for that dream. What headlines throughout Florida politics made you scream?
Lately, the headlines that have made me scream have to do with kind of this culture of sexual harassment in Tallahassee, where we're kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg. I mean, and over the last couple of months, we've just seen one headline after another. So in that respect, it makes me want to scream just because I'm frustrated, you know, of how prevalent it seems that lots of women in Tallahassee in the process have suffered with, you know, kind of these situations and makes our jobs difficult. So I would say that is definitely probably at the top of my list.
It's amazing to see how the ripple effects of this Me Too movement, and amazing in the sense it's just shining a spotlight of what people sort of already knew was there, but no one really said or couldn't figure out a way how to expose it in such a big way.
Yes, exactly. So I would say, you know, as a woman in Tallahassee who has worked up at the Capitol for many years, I mean, this is something that each woman that I've ever spoken with, and again, I work under Nancy Smith, who is an editor of mine, and she's a very old-time journalist. But I mean, she said to me before I even got up to Tallahassee, she said, you know, you need to be careful up there because there are men and people who will take advantage of you if they get the opportunity. And I mean, just to have your kind of job prefaced with that and have to be warned about that, I think is very, very chilling. But I'm not the only person that's been told that. I know that for sure.
So after heeding that warning, what have you witnessed or experienced with that culture once you got to Tallahassee?
I mean, I think it's something that you have to be cognizant of, and you have to be aware of kind of what we see in Tallahassee is a very male dominated culture. And ironically, and I was talking with somebody about this earlier, is, you know, you have this male dominated culture, but the people who really work behind the scenes and kind of really make the wheels turn are women. I mean, you can even see that in, you know, somebody like Joe Negron's office, you have Katie Betta, who does his kind of communication strategy. Rick Scott has a chief of staff who's a woman. And these are all people who are key players in the system who keep it running. And there are, you know, advisors and consultants who are women, two very powerful people who in essence guide these men to where they're at, but never get any credit for it. You know, whether that's by choice or just kind of by design of the system, it is an interesting dynamic to witness and to witness from afar, but also to kind of be a part of and just kind of see how it plays out.
In your latest reporting on the status of former Senate Budget Chief Jack Latvala, with that case and the allegations against him of possible public corruption and the way he traded possible votes for sexual favors, anything stuck out in your head from the details that came out of the multiple reports in that case?
I mean, I think when it comes to Senator Latvala, I mean, in essence, I have so much sympathy for these women, you know, who came forward with these allegations, because I've heard firsthand just how big of an impact kind of the fallout has had on them. And it's never easy to come public against, you know, with very serious accusations and say, you know, like the Me Too movement, where you're saying this happened to me, and this is a very powerful person who at the time when Senator Latvala was, you know, in Tallahassee, he was the Senate Budget Chief, who is, in essence, one of the most powerful people in the legislature. So that's very intimidating. And I think, you know, the backlash that we have seen for women that have spoken out is, quite frankly, it's upsetting to hear that. And, you know, while it's upsetting, it's also an opportunity for lawmakers and for just people in the process to understand that this is going on. And it, even if they're just aware of it, to say, like, we can put a stop to this because we know how it affects people and, you know, how it really negatively, you know, just affects a great core of the population who's up there helping the wheels turn, like I mentioned earlier. And I think the other thing that it brings up is, you know, there's actually been a lot of focus on the Florida Senate and having kind of these allegations of sexual harassment come out. I mean, before Senator Latvala, before the Politico story ran out about Senator Latvala, we had Jeff Clemons, who resigned because he had an extramarital affair with a lobbyist. So, but the ironic part that I have noticed and have observed is that the House and the Senate are very different in that the Senate, there's actually more room for women to make a difference, for elected lawmakers to make a difference, because women compose a third of the Senate. You have some very smart women up there, you know, people like Dana Young, who are talking about running, you know, they're running their own races and doing, you know, kind of speaker races and doing stuff like that. But you also have this very male-dominated House, which, it's, to me, the ironic part comes in that we are putting such a focus on the Senate, and in an essence, and I hope this makes sense, there was clearly an issue with several senators there, but that's a very big obstacle. So all eyes are on the Senate right now. There's also an opportunity for these female senators to make a difference, because all eyes are on them. And it's actually the place where they have more say than they do in the House, because the House, from what I've observed, it's very male driven. If you are a woman there, you could be just as smart as somebody else, but they have all these young, you know, male lawmakers who are ambitious and, you know, got elected, but it is a very male dominated culture. So I think, you know, that's something that I've observed, and it is ironic that the Senate is the one that's being put under a magnifying glass. It's the place where women have more power there.
Yeah, no, I think it comes across. And I'm wondering, is it just a numbers issue over in the House, or?
Well, I think it's always been a culture issue as well as a numbers issue. I mean, numerically, obviously, the Senate, there are significantly fewer people. But even just kind of culturally, the House has always been known kind of as a boys club. And if you're a man that, you know, is an elected House official, like, you have more chance of being successful than a woman does. There are plenty of smart representatives in the House who are women who can't seem to go as far. Just, you know, part of it might be because they're women. I think that's, you know, a big problem in that specific chamber.
One of the things that we've seen, and many have faced backlash for being insensitive, is criticizing the Me Too movement as going too far. And of course, you know, there are nuances and different scenarios and different situations, but I'm segueing over to what do we make of consensual relationships when we were back putting the spotlight on the Senate, when we have the issue with two senators engaging in consensual, what we see as a consensual extramarital affair that would be matters of the household.
I mean, I think when it comes to people who are in the same position of power, it is, I think the story is a little bit different, and it's not necessarily a Me Too if it's consensual. You know, it's not necessarily a sexual harassment issue if two people signed off on it and they said, this is what we want to do. I think where it becomes an issue and where people have raised questions about, you know, extramarital affairs that have happened between senators in office right now is that, were there political stakes or were there favors made as a result of this relationship that these two senators had? And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, and I don't think, you know, it's possible, but it's also possible that they're, you know, that that was just a relationship and nothing more. But I think when it comes to, we do cross a very interesting line where it's like, where do we cross the line? Do we cross it at all if it's consensual?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's, then that, I think that varies, you know, case to case.
All right. So where, what do you think will happen next? Where do we go from here with this issue? This turning point, will things change for the better in your opinion?
I mean, I think when you have any significant change, there's always, in any kind of historical, like if you reflect back to any kind of movements, there's always like a violent disruption before any long-term change is reached. And I think what we have seen is, you know, a lot of violent disruption in the system where people are saying, and they're coming out publicly and they're saying, this is happening to me, this is wrong. And I think if you don't identify that first, then you cannot reach this point where we have long-term change for the betterment of, you know, women getting more opportunities in Tallahassee, you know, maybe getting elected to office more easily. But I mean, I think this was the tip of the iceberg in essence. And I think that we will see an environment that is friendlier to women, where women are treated more as equals. At least that's my hope, that in the future, when a man comes into Tallahassee, either as an elected official or a lobbyist, and sees a woman, you know, there, and this isn't to say that this is how all men think, because I would never say that, but that they view them as equals, as people that they can work with, and not, you know, people that are equal, just human beings, rather than, oh, she's a woman, or, oh, he's a man. So I think if we can get ourselves onto an even playing field, then Tallahassee and just the world in general will be a much more harmonious place.
So Allison Nielsen, you're trading in Tallahassee politics and this culture that we're speaking of, and you're heading to Washington, D.C. And we've all heard so many different things about Washington. What are you bracing for? And tell us about what you're about to do.
I am actually going to be the communications director for Congressman Tom Rooney, who represents Florida's 17th district. In terms of what I'm expecting to work very hard, meet a lot of interesting people, see how the sausage is made, so to speak. And, you know, I've been on this ride for about 5 years, and I love the ride. Like, I think the process is amazing and incredible. And I think being on Capitol Hill is going to be, you know, just kind of the thrill of a lifetime for somebody who's a political junkie like me.
Yeah. And you have an interesting background. How did you make the transition into becoming a reporter? Take us back to that night you were telling yourself, and like you were waking up the next day and like, okay, I'm going to be starting to tell stories, interviewing people, getting quotes, and working in this new media space that we're in. And how has it been so far?
I always enjoyed writing from the time that I was young. I went to a performing arts high school for communications, specifically focused on creative writing and journalism. So that's something that I have been doing for, you know, I don't know, many years. I won't date myself, but many years. And then when I was in college, I was involved with our student newspaper. And that, I mean, journalism never really struck me as a full-time career. It was something that I love to write, and I always have loved to write, but I never really imagine myself being a journalist. I think until I actually graduated college and had, you know, some kind of legal jobs where I was, you know, pushing paper as a secretary. But I had worked with the student newspaper at Florida Atlantic University, where I started freelancing and, you know, still kept my connections there and ended up freelancing for Sunshine State News. I was a political science major in college. So as a political science major who always liked to write, I think it actually makes total sense how I came to be a political reporter. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of a roundabout way of getting there. So I never really woke up one day and had like a light bulb moment where I was like, I'm going to be a reporter. It was just kind of a, an interesting road. So one stop and then another stop and then another stop. And then I was like, well, here I am. I'm a political reporter now, and it makes sense.
I wish you all the best in Washington as you head off to work with Congressman Tom Rooney. And I look forward to working with you on that side and fielding questions and doing what you do and taking media requests and so on and so forth. Thank you for taking this time to speak with me here on the Rotunda.
Thank you, Tramiel, for having me. I appreciate it.
Special thanks to Allison Nielsen with Sunshine State News. As we wrap up, it was Senior Day at the Capitol last week, lots of activities in the Capitol courtyard, and I met a certified ombudsman. Gary Frank is with Florida's Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
Retired, but was looking for a way to give back and serve. And I joined this program about 6 years ago and received extensive training and internship and then began going into the field, answering calls. We do two things. One thing we do is go and visit nursing homes on a periodic basis, unannounced, but we go and interview multiple residents in every facility just to get a feeling for what the attitude is by the staff, and are people generally satisfied, are they getting the care. What we do is look for a resident to be able to live in one of these facilities with the same privileges they have of living in home.
And this is the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program that you're a part of
right.
For 6 years now.
Correct.
For those who don't know, do you guys provide counseling and care, just what you mentioned, to nursing homes? Those are in nursing home facilities?
We provide some consulting services to them, but our real lot in life and our mission is to represent that and advocate for that resident, whatever that may be. It may be that I'm not getting my medications on time. It may be that there's some abusive staff, or maybe even a family member is exploiting them financially or physically. We investigate and deal with those situations as well. So we become that person who cannot possibly, potentially not speak for themselves. So we learn what the issues are and on a confidential basis, and then we come to a conclusion one way or the other, and if need be, we get counsel, legal counsel. Hopefully that doesn't generally happen, because we do have the force of the statutes of the state of Florida to visit and to advocate. And so it's a very rewarding, because you get to do it at the lowest possible level. It avoids all the court or family getting all upset. If we can hear from a family that have issues and they're frustrated, there's nothing better than going in and feeling like you're adding to the mix and advocating for those folks.
So what's the state of the program?
What we need more is volunteers to do this program. That there's a lot of folks, and as our baby boomers are coming to the age where they're going to participate and be part of these facilities, they're demanding more services, and so recruiting and getting folks excited about our program and becoming a part of it is probably the major issue.
So how does one become part of it? How do I volunteer, or how does someone volunteer?
Well, let me give you a card.
So they would contact?
They would contact the Ombudsman office at 800 number.
If you are interested in becoming a volunteer, visit ombudsman.myflorida.com or call 1-888-831-0404. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramiel Gomes.